Hey, it's Tony and Melissa. Thanks so much for listening to our podcast.
Here are some of the best parts from today's show. Hope you'll subscribe, share, and like us.
We have Frank Recchia. He is a dear friend of mine. We used to report together at News 12, and I'm sure a lot of you at home, especially if you live in Bridgeport, you know Frank personally. He does a lot of great work right here in the Park City, and I wanted to help him with something that's going on with his family. Frank, how are you this morning?
Good morning, Melissa. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, I'm glad that we could have you on. So, Frank, I've been so devastated. Tony and I, every morning, have been praying for you and your family. Your brother's still missing 3 weeks later. What can you tell us?
Well, you know, it's been a heartbreaking situation because Peter, who's 59, has special needs. He suffers from early onset dementia, and he's battled mental health issues for years. So he just disappeared. He was last seen 3 weeks ago walking in New Haven. He's actually from Middletown, and it's just been a heartbreaker, especially for Peter's daughter, Bunny Rodriguez, my niece. This has been really one of the most painful experiences of our entire lives.
Now, has Peter ever gone missing before? Is this the first time that this has happened?
This is the first time. He keeps to, like many people, if you know people who have autism, he has very similar mannerisms, and he keeps to a religious schedule. You know, he would call his daughter every morning. I would speak to him periodically throughout the year, but he would call his daughter every morning and throughout the day. So for him to suddenly drop off the map, radio silence, it's really not a good situation. We can't figure it out. You know, but at this point, we've been thinking about it after years of covering news. You know, with the exception of the Doulos case, bodies do tend to show up rather quickly. And especially if he was on his beaten track, if he was going about his routine, it's almost easier for us to make a case for thinking that, you know, in his delusional state, maybe he got in somebody's car and they took him out of state and he ended up in a hospital somewhere. So, you know, the investigators and my niece have been doing everything they possibly can to contact places throughout the region, but to no avail at this point. So it really has been a heartbreaker.
Frank, I know this is very painful for you, but my question is, do you think there was any foul play involved in this?
You know, there's really no way to know in today's world. When you walk all the time, anything could happen. You could come across people with bad intentions. Though Peter suffered from mental health issues, he was never violent. He was always a very gentle, warm-hearted person. You know, not everybody's a brain surgeon or a district attorney. My brother Peter is a very simple man who walks around reading the Bible and talking with people. And the world is filled with people like this. And we know from experience that Peter is a very gentle-hearted, peaceful, good person, simple person. And we don't know what he came up against. There could have been foul play. Most certainly. We see that every day. It's heartbreaking to see what man is capable of at his worst. So he could have come up against something terrible, but we hope and pray that wasn't the case.
What can people do if they even saw him maybe a day or two or even a week ago? I know, Frank, you and I, we certainly have covered stories very similar in the past, and I think sometimes people worry that, oh, well, it was a week ago, so that's not significant, but it is. I mean, even if it was 3 weeks ago that you passed Peter or you may have recognized him, what can people do if they think maybe they may have spotted him?
Well, please, by all means, if you see Peter, I would encourage somebody to stop and chat with him. We have been reaching out to as many people as possible to get the word out that call your local police department. You can stop and engage him if you think you see him. He has a very distinctive look. We've been getting his picture out. He's a nice person. He will engage with you. But just keep in mind that if he is in a delusional state due to his mental health issues, that he is not dangerous. He's somebody who has always been very chatty and warm and nice and affable. So we hope people would, if they recognize him, stop and talk to him, keep him there, and by all means call the police. And word has pretty well gotten out to everybody in the region. So I think all the police departments, certainly in Connecticut, know to look for him, and they're aware of the heartbreaking situation.
Yeah, and we will add his picture to our podcast. We'll have this on our podcast after the show, just so that if people have not seen his photo, like you mentioned, it's pretty much all over the news outlets. But if they haven't seen it, we'll also add it to ours. Frank, we are keeping you and your family in our prayers. I'm so sorry, my friend, and I'm hoping that Peter shows up very soon.
Thank you so much. We appreciate it.
We are very lucky enough to have Greg Dancho here on the telephone line, and he's from the Beardsley Zoo. Hey, Greg, what's up?
How you doing? Good. We're doing well here. I have Kathy McGee here, who's one of our board members for the Connecticut Zoological Society, and we're a little talking here this morning about our Endangered Species Gala coming up on November 2nd. We're really excited about that. A lot of people, again, I do realize that the zoo's real main mission here is conservation and education, and we're really proud to have some of the most endangered species of animals on the planet here at Connecticut Spruce Zoo, like our Amur leopards and our Amur tigers. Again, being fortunate enough to have cubs born from both of those species. Amur leopards being the most endangered species of cat on the planet. You know, there's only about 60 of them left in the wild and about 300 left on the planet itself. So we're really proud in Bridgeport at Connecticut Spruce Zoo to have these species. So to support that, we have worked, again, with the Connecticut Zoological Society. The Connecticut Zoological Society, who owns and operates the zoo, is always looking to raise more funding to support our projects. And we're really happy that Kathy McGee is our chair of our this year's Endangered Species Gala.
Yeah, well, Greg and Kathy, we're so glad you're here. Kathy, talk to us about the gala. Obviously, this is an amazing event. My husband and I got an invitation to it. We're bummed we're going to be at a wedding, unfortunately, so we can't go, but we sent in our donation anyways. But this sounds like it's going to be an amazing event that really is benefiting the endangered species, obviously.
Well, it is an amazing event, and thank you so much for the opportunity to talk about our second annual Endangered Species Gala. It's going to be on Saturday, November 2nd. From 6 to 10 at the Patterson Club in Fairfield. And we still have just a few tickets left, and the people that come will get to enjoy cocktails, entertainment, animal encounters, and we have an online and a silent and live auction, and we have a wonderful MC, Evan Kaufman, who's a comedian, and our special guest speaker will be Richard Hyman, who's a diver, explorer, and navigator aboard Jacques Cousteau's famed Calypso ship. So I know it's going to be a fascinating evening talking about wildlife conservation, and of course all the funds will go to support our zoo's mission of conservation, education, recreation, and research. And we do have our auction going online October 29th at 12 p.m. We have fabulous items, jewelry, baskets, overnights, and you can find out all this information at our website, beardsleyzoo.org.
So, Kathy, I just want to reiterate that. So if you can't go to the event, you could still do the auction online?
Correct.
Oh, that's pretty cool.
Online October 29th. And, of course, we love taking any donations that people would like to give the zoo also. We have two wonderful presenting sponsors, People's Bank and the Nett family, giving us $10,000 each. So we're very proud of that, and we have a lot of other sponsors also. And I just want to say it's been an absolute pleasure for me to work with Greg for the past 3.5 years. Greg's going to be celebrating his 40th anniversary with the zoo, which is tremendous, bringing the zoo into the 21st century and, you know, all the things that are different now than they were when Greg started. So we're very proud of that. And also we have a wonderful board who is very supportive of all the things that we do.
You know, let's talk a little bit about the gala itself. First of all, what time does it begin?
It begins at 6 o'clock on November 2nd.
Okay. And of course, you've got there's a fee in order to get in, right, to buy tickets?
Yes, there is a fee. It's $250 a ticket or $2,500 a table. And, you know, as I said, all the money goes to support the conservation, education, the recreation and research, our zoo's mission. And as Greg mentioned, we have all of these wonderful endangered species here at this Connecticut Beardsley Zoo, the only zoo in Connecticut. So we really want to celebrate that.
Sure. And there's going to be food, music, the whole nine yards.
Absolutely. We have entertainment, wonderful food provided by the Patterson Club, and also, of course, our guest speaker, Richard Hyman, I'm sure will be telling us a wonderful story about his time on the Calypso with Jacques Cousteau.
Yeah, absolutely. And Greg, before we let you guys go, can you give us any updates to the zoo? I know about a week or two ago we shared a new member of your zoo family. What is going on with the zoo besides the gala, which obviously is a big highlight of the season? What else is happening at the zoo right now?
Yeah, again, as we mentioned before, Melissa, that you know, our zoo working with conservation and working getting some new species. So I'm happy to say that you guys are going to hear that we just received a new ocelot. A young female ocelot that came in from L.A., Los Angeles Zoo. She is right now in our animal care center. Every animal that comes into the zoo from other facilities goes through a little quarantine period just to make sure that if there's any issues from traveling or any issues they're bringing in, we can make sure that they're doing well. So we're really happy that our new female ocelot has come into the zoo, and she'll go through that quarantine and then be out on in the rainforest building within the next month or so. So really excited to announce that today for you guys.
All right, folks, it sounds like you got a lot of good things going on. Good luck with the gala, good luck with the zoo, and we'll be in touch. We'll talk again real soon, I promise.
Thank you. And also, don't forget, beardsleyzoo.org.
All right, sounds good. Thanks for getting that plug in. All right.
Take care.
It's 9:30. Do you know what time it is? It's time for the Coffee Break Chat on WICC.
All right, with us here this morning is Lynn, the magic of Lynn. She's a master illusionist, and she's going to be performing next Saturday at 7 p.m. at Massac High School on Monroe Turnpike in Monroe. And this is a family-friendly show, and the kids are going to love it. The adults are going to love it. And we're very happy to have Lynn here with us this morning. How are you, Lynn?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me on.
Oh, no problem. It's a pleasure to have you here. This show sounds like it's going to be absolutely amazing.
I think so.
Well, tell us about it. Like, what goes on here? Are you going to make things disappear?
I know. Can you define illusionist for anybody out there? Because I felt so bad for Bob Goldstein, who kind of set this up for us, and I kept saying, I was like, maybe she could hypnotize us on air, and he's like, no, that's not what she does. So tell us what is your craft? What's your specialty, Lynn?
Well, basically, being an illusionist means that I perform these large scale stage illusions, as opposed to somebody specializing in close-up magic, doing cards, sleight of hand, things like that. So, you know, it can range anywhere from making somebody appear to, you know, twisting my assistant's body, which happens to be a male, by the way. I have an all-male crew, which is a lot of fun, of course, being one of the only female illusionists in the world. So, you know, making people appear, disappear, you know, twisting up my assistant's body into a corkscrew, putting them in a box and you know, making it shrink into a cube that's about 1 foot by 1 foot, things like that.
Wow, how do I learn to do that? Not that I would do that to Tony. That's not what my intentions are. That's wild. And you said you're one of the only female illusionists in the world?
Yes. There really are only a handful of us.
Wow, that's really incredible stuff. So, Lynn, what brings you to Monroe? Because I'm looking at your resume here. I know that you've been in amazing venues like New York. You've been at the legendary Magic Castle in Hollywood. I mean, what brings you to Monroe, Connecticut?
Well, I live in Westport, Massachusetts, and although I perform nationally and, you know, tour from coast to coast every once in a while, somebody finds out about my show and thinks that it would be a wonderful way to raise money for their organization. And I just love what I do so much that I'll bring my show into any venue. And it's just all about bringing magic to families and giving them this really extraordinary experience that they can share with each other.
We're talking about the magic of Lynn. She's a master illusionist, and she's coming to Monroe doing a special show at Massac High School. This is happening next Saturday, and we're going to tell you how you can get tickets and all of that. How did all of this come about, Lynn? I mean, how did you become a master illusionist? This must have been something that you've been honing your craft since you were a little girl, right?
Oh, absolutely. I was 12 years old when I discovered magic. And the cool thing was I was extremely shy as a young girl. I'd hide behind my parents when I'd be introduced to somebody. And when I discovered magic, it just transformed my whole life. You know, it just brought me right out of my shell. And, I started out really just not having any female role models in the business. So I just had to teach myself. You know, I read a lot of magic books. We didn't have DVDs back then or, you know, things like that to learn from. Taught myself, made all of my own tricks. I can recall walking up and down the local highways collecting aluminum cans to turn into recycle for money to buy magic eventually. But, no, I put all my little tricks in a cardboard box, and I'd walk around my neighborhood, and I would ring my neighbor's doorbell and ask if they wanted to see a show in their living room. So, you know,
wow.
I did my routine, honestly, you know, pack up and move on to the next neighbor's house. And it was just a couple of months ago that I stopped performing in the hood.
Wow.
That's great.
But, no, and so that led to birthday parties and scout groups, and, you know, I kept honing my skills and gained more experience through every show and had my sights set on how I wanted my show to develop into a full-blown theatrical production with, these great spectacular illusions and choreography and lighting and music and so forth, you know?
Is there any audience participation? Do you bring people up from the stage?
I sure do. There's a lot of that for kids and adults, so it's really a heck of a lot of fun.
What would you say is like your trick? What is your big, I'd say, audience thriller? What are you known for? What is your go-to that it's like, yep, this is all magic of Lynn right now?
Oh my goodness. Well, my signature illusion that I've done for, almost my entire career has been my finale. It's just a tried and true illusion, but the execution of it is just unbelievable. It's really within a split second. And I don't want to give it away, but it'll bring the audience to their feet, really.
Wow.
And it's just beautiful with a patriotic ending and so forth. So that's something I'm really super proud of. You know, and then I get to do some other cool things, like I perform with symphony orchestras once in a while. We've performed with the Hartford Symphony, as a matter of fact, where my illusions are performed in front of the symphony, and they play the popular classics to accompany the magic. And that's exhilarating to do. We just performed with the Dallas Symphony a few weeks ago. And then we do, you know, an array of different types of things, corporate events. And, you know, I've put together a voting program called Your Vote is Magic, using my magic to teach young people about the importance of voting in their lives. So it's pretty comprehensive.
Lynn, we are running out of time, unfortunately.
Yeah.
But is there a website folks can go to if they want to learn more about you?
Absolutely. It's your, this one is called, I've got three websites. This one for this show would be magicoflynn.com. Lynn only has one N, so it's magicoflynn.com.
All right, and if you'd like to see the Magic of Lynn, individual tickets are priced in advance, $25 for adults, $15 for children, 12 and under. Tickets are also available at the door, $30 for adults, $20 for children, 12 and under. In addition, tickets can be purchased by phone at 203-426-5188. It's going to be a great, great evening, and why not? The Magic of Lynn is going to dazzle you. Lynn, I thank you so much for taking a few minutes. It's fascinating. Thank you.
Oh, thank you so much.
Do you feel obligated to go to work even if you're sick as a dog? Now, some of us, we don't miss a day of work. We've got to be dying. We've got to be in the coffin before we would miss a day of work. Some of us are like that, you know? I'm kind of like that. I've missed time here, but I've really got to be sick, really sick, or the doctor has to say, Tony, you can't go into work. You're going to infect everybody in the office. But other than that, I'm here more or less 99.3% of the time.
Yeah. No, you are. It's true. And I think I've kind of followed that way, too. I mean, I don't know if this stems from when I was a kid, Tony, and with school, because I grew up with my mom, who was a registered nurse. I mean, if she got a phone call from school and we weren't, you know, visibly sick, I mean, like throwing up. Or, like, white as a ghost, she
you'd hear the wrath of it. Like, why would you have me pull you out of school? So we never played the, oh, like, we're sick, and put the thermometer up to the light and have a fake fever. Like, no, my mom always caught us. So I think from a young age, we realized that it was like, look, even if we were sick, it had to be something bad for us to come home from school. And I think that just kind of stuck with us. I can't remember the last time I took a day off because I was sick. It's honestly, if I take a day off, it's usually because Chase is sick and nobody's there to watch him. So yeah, I don't think it's at least in our household, it doesn't really fly either for us. That's for sure.
All right. Well, you came and you heeded the call, and that was our question of the day. So let's read back some of these. Margie says, fever or vomiting, I stay home. Otherwise, I'm working. Fair enough, Margie.
There it is. Michelle said, since I own my own business, I don't really get any sick days, but I will cancel client appointments if I have a bug that may get them sick, or I give them the option. I have in the past taught classes, running a fever, napping between the classes. That was awful. I will never do that again. I would cancel.
Fair enough. I don't blame you. Sandra says, fortunately, I have the option to work from home if I'm sick. The only time I did not work was when I had the flu a few years ago. Well, yeah, you know, I know the last time I had the flu, I mean, my head felt like it was 25 pounds. I couldn't lift it off the pillow, you know?
Yeah, that's brutal. That's brutal. Yeah, and I think Sandra brings up a great point. More and more workplaces are allowing you to work from home. I know my husband's done that a couple of times where he's worked from home and it's been okay. Even my brother, whose wife just delivered last week, he's doing paternity leave from home. So really, he's still working, even though he's at home. Carl said, my personal rule was unless I had a fever, I would still go to work.
All right. Denny says, yes, I work even. Let's try that again. Yes, I work anyways, even though we have a policy against coming to work if you have a fever or have been vomiting in the last 24 hours. If you call out, there are consequences.
I know. I always worry about that. Nancy said, absolutely not. Lots of people who are sick at work spread it to others, so that is not good. Well, I wish I had your mentality, Nancy.
Right. Sarah says, no, because I work with babies and children. Well, ooh, there you go. You got to watch yourself there.
That's very smart. Carol said, I was a supervisor in a specialty area of healthcare. Yes, I went to work when I wasn't 100%. Fortunately, I was rarely sick. I was concerned, though, that my work would not get done if she missed. I think a lot of people have that guilt.
Okay, and Ida says you should not go to work sick and spread it to everyone else, period.
All right, Ida, we'll listen to you. And Claudia rounds us off by saying, as a nurse back in the day, and even as a simple task, just watching my grandson and working with my husband, I still feel obligated to do as much as I can when I'm sick. I carry tremendous amounts of guilt. Unless I'm so sick and contagious, I still get to work when I have to.
Well, you see, now, for example, like my wife, my wife never misses a day. And even when she's sick, she still goes in and does her job. And I says, well, why are you so dedicated? Why do you feel so out? You feel sick. Take a day. And it's true. She says, well, if I don't do my work, there's nobody there to cover. And then the work just piles up. That now there's the pile is going to be higher than me. Mm-hmm. And she's only 5'2", you know. So, you know, she's afraid to get to a point where she's not going to be able to get out from under the mountain of work.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I do think, though, if you know, there's a lot of things with this line of work that can get challenging. I will say, Tony, that for the most part, I think this is one of the only jobs that I don't feel awful. Like, I don't feel I'll fall behind. I feel badly that I'd leave you solo, but I don't feel I'd fall behind, because what's great is every day kind of wipes clean, you know, like news changes the next day, topics change the next day. So I feel like with our job, it's one of the only ones that I don't feel like I'm falling behind, other than to get pre-recordings done or something. I think we're one of the only jobs. Everyone else, I think, does feel like, oh, I'm going to fall behind.
I know. I know what you mean.